Food service announcement, I will not be here next week, so next Thursday night there will be no shiur next Thursday night. I'm going to be the Ezras Hashem in Eretz Yisrael, so we should continue in 2 weeks probably. Also, before we get started for tonight, last week we spoke about the great beer controversy, and two things happened after that I just wanted to follow up with. One is the headlines show, which was very interesting. It revealed a lot of the backstory. So you may want to go listen to that. It was very, very interesting. We'll leave it at that. And the second was that I got an email. You know, part of what I was doing last week is I tried to present like the historical background to mechiros for major companies, and you know what happened with Rabbi Teitz doing a mechira, and then moving over to Rabbi Belsky doing a mechira, and what I was the whole history I was basing off of an article I found on the OU website from Rabbi Yaakov Luban, who is a very chashuv rav and a big tzaddik who I happen to know quite well, and is one of the top people at the OU. And I got an email from another very chashuv rav, Rabbi Tani Schwartz, Rabbi Jonathan Schwartz from Elizabeth, New Jersey, and he was not particularly pleased with the way I presented the Rabbi Teitz Mechira situation. The way I presented it was that Rabbi Teitz sold the chametz of a major company, not the company, but the chametz of a major company, and thought that even though they continue to do business on Pesach, and even buy more chametz on Pesach, that the mechira covers that chametz as well. So Rabbi Schwartz writes to me as follows. He wrote a lot of very nice things first, and then he writes, while you present, I just don't want you to think he came out guns blazing, you know. While you presented the Shir's OU policy, based on Rabbi Luban's article, I assume, I must let you know that Rav Belsky Zatzal and his shita of allowing the sale of C&S as a business is, at least the way I heard it from Rabbi Luban last time I challenged him on it, not OU policy, but rather of Belsky acting on his own. So I think that's 100%, that's Kuliyal Milapligi. The OU doesn't do these mechiras at all. Rabbi Belsky's based in did it because Rabbi Belsky thought that it was necessary to do it. Whether Rabbi Belsky even holds it's the right thing to do is not abundantly clear as a lechadchila, but he felt that he had to do it. So, but then second, and I think this is more important, number two, he says, I know this to be so because the sale of CNS for years following this same idea when it was sold in Elizabeth to Mary Lemanis, who continues to function in the same way that John Brown does in Riverdale, she was buying all of the businesses, and any chametz the businesses purchased were clearly considered purchased by her on her behalf as per the sale document that Rav Teitz uses each and every year. Maran Rav Teitz tells me that this is the same shtar that his father Zatzal used. I have sat at the Mechira, listened to the same process and wording for the last 15 years. The same person, the same handkerchief have been used at all of them. So as the Nusuch in the same shtar, Rav Chaim Jachter, a Dayan in our Beis Din, is also always there, as is Rav Chaim Marcus, among many others. So essentially what he's saying is that Rabbi Teitz Zatzal's Mechira was also a mechira of the entire company and not just a mechira of chametz. And then he writes, when for certain political reasons it was decided that instead of CNS selling to Mary Lemanis through the Elizabeth Beis Din, that it will be sold through Rav Belsky's Beis Din, Rav Belsky asked Rav Teitz to look over the shtar. Rav Teitz pointed out a certain issue, Rav Belsky corrected it, thanked him very much for the correction. Fine. And thus, it is and was incorrect to represent Rav Teitz Zatzal's position as that one may sell the store and keep it open and get new schora. A simple read of the Shtar Mechira of the Beis Din of Elizabeth would demonstrate that this is not so. It was also not accurate to point out that Rav Belsky did not hold of the Beis Din of Elizabeth position. He did it himself, and his Beis Din continues to do so until today. You can ask Rav Teitz Shlita. I'm sure he'll be happy to share it with you. Okay, so that was Rabbi Schwartz clarified that issue. He said, I can go back to Rabbi Luban and ask him if he would retract what he wrote in his article. I happen to have seen Rabbi Luban this week, but it was at a Shiva house. I didn't think it was really appropriate to start challenging him on the history of Mechiras Chametz at that point in time. So be that as it may, it doesn't change the maskana of the shir last week, which, if you recall, there was no maskana. So it doesn't really change, you know, the analysis of what's going on today. That's about just setting the record straight for Rabbi Teitz, Zichrono Levracha. I think I was pretty clear that Kuli Amalo Pligi, the Rav Teitz Zatzal, was an Adam Gadol Ad Ma'od. I think that's very difficult to challenge. I remember when I was learning in Keren Biavne, we got word that Rav Teitz had passed away, and his Levaya was going to be in Eretz Yisrael by Har Menuchos, I think. And so I was clearing, should I miss second Seder to go to Rav Teitz's Levaya? I'm not from Elizabeth, but my grandmother, Allah Shalom, lived in Elizabeth, and Rabbi Teitz, my grandmother, barely spoke English. She did not have much of an education, and she became an almana at a pretty young age. So she had three little pitzalach to raise on her own. She had a very little source of income, and Rabbi Teitz Zatzal gave her a job as a cook in JEC. Now, my grandmother was a tzaddikas, a tremendous tzaddikas, not a great cook. But, and Rabbi Teitz was trying to take care of an almana. So tremendous hakar satov that my family has to Rabbi Teitz. So, but how yeshiva bachurim are, nothing is more important than your learning, and that's a good thing for yeshiva bachurim to feel that way. So I said, yeah, I'm not gonna miss second seder. I'm sure my father will go be Menachem Avler or something. I'm not gonna go miss second seder. So then I open up the Gemara we're learning Ksubis. I open up to the second parak of Ksubis where the sugya we were holding in the second parak of Ksubis, and mamish the Gemara we were holding in Bekiyah Seder that day was how your mevatel Talmud Torah for Otzah Semeis. So the Gemara says, how many people do you need there for Otzah Semeis? So the Gemara says, so if it's someone who learned a lot of Torah, then Shishim Ribo. Then if there are less than 600,000 people at the Levaya, you got to go. You have to, because Shanitna B'Shishim Ribo, Kachna Tilasa B'Shishim Ribo. It was given the 600,000, and the Torah is taken away, it should be the 600,000. And then the Gemara goes on to say, and Laman Demasni, if he not only was Tana, but he was Masni also, not only he learned, but he taught also, then there's no Shir. It doesn't matter how many people are there, you go anyway. You Mevatel Tam. So I sat down with Meir Horowitz, who's now Rabbi Meir Horowitz from Dallas, Texas. We were Chavrusas. I opened up my the Gemara. That's the first Gemara we read. Mamish, that's the lines we were up to. I closed my Gemara. I said, I'll see you tomorrow. And I got on the bus and I went to the Levaya. And Rabbi Teitz Shlita gave a hesped for his father. And one of the first things I think he mentioned in his hesped was that while there are many Marbitzei Torah in the world, his father, Zichron Levracha, was the greatest Marbitz Torah in terms of quantity. And there's no question about that. In terms of quantity, of how many people he was being Marbitz Torah to, because he had, this was before the internet, he had a radio show. A Yiddish Gemara Shir on the radio, and there were like these old Jews who just loved hearing Yiddish that, you know, weren't even Shomer Shabbos, that would tune in to Rabbi Teitz's Gemara Shir on the radio, and there were hundreds of thousands of people listening to Rabbi Teitz's Gemara Shir in Yiddish on the radio. A very special Jew indeed. You read some of the tshuvas back and forth with him and Ramesha. So Chas B'Shalom, I would never mean to suggest anything at all, even slightly, could be construed as negative about Rabbi Teitz Zatzal or Rabbi Teitz Shlita. I just thought that was the Metzius. I was just describing what I thought was the Metzius. I could be wrong. I'm not. I mean, Rabbi Short says I am definitely wrong. So be that as it may, I think the rest of the shir still stands. I think in terms of last week's presentation. Okay, so this week there's still time. Yeah, there's still time to learn something this week. So two different issues came up this week. One was just a broad issue that kept on coming up in different contexts, and that is just a general what seems to be either hisrashlus or a suspicion of hisrashlus in the halachos of the Avelus of Svira. For example, I'm going to give you four different examples where this came up this week. A number of people were asking about music, shaving, haircutting, for Yom Ha'atzma'ut, meaning do we suspend at all the dinim of sfira for Yom Ha'atzma'ut? Number two, weddings. It used to be when I was a kid, no one got married until Lag BaOmer. Period. It just wasn't done. You wouldn't have a wedding. And it seems that there were a lot of weddings certainly before Rosh Chodesh, then on Rosh Chodesh, and then even on the second day Rosh Chodesh, going into the night following, people were asking shaylos about all these weddings they were going to. Can they go to the wedding? Can they dance at the wedding? Can they shave for the wedding? If they shave for the wedding, does that mean they're stuck keeping those days of Sfira as opposed to keeping the last days of Sfira as opposed to the first days of Sfira? So that's the second case came up. Third case came up. Right now I have two sons that are at the Yankee game, right? Unless it's over. Is it over? It's over. They win? Okay. So that was a clever way to find out. So I have, it's rude to check my phone. I have two sons who were this evening, I believe, at Yankee Stadium. I hold it's usher. They didn't ask. One went with his Rebbe, but I have another son that went to a Mets game with his Rebbe this week. Is that I gave away the conclusion, I guess, but is that mutter? The youth director of my shul asked, can we, you know, Jewish Heritage Day at Citi Field, always during Sfira. and during the time that everybody holds a sphere, it's like it's during the, so Jewish Heritage Day at Citi Field, can we get a group together to do that? So that's a third potential issue. I just got an email today, just a few hours ago. Rabbi, is there anything wrong with going to a comedy show during Sfira? So to what extent are any of these things mutter, or just to throw in a wild card, a fifth one? Last year, I remember I was in the OU office on a Friday just to listen to Rav Shechter answer Shailas, and Rabbi Ganak came into Rav Shechter's office, and Rabbi Ganak said, I have a Sfira Shaila. He said, okay. He said, I was invited to a conference of Abraham Lincoln scholars. Rabbi Ganak has a thing. He is one of the world's foremost scholars of Abraham Lincoln. In his office in the OU, he has a picture of Rav Soloveitchik and Abraham Lincoln. he goes to conventions of Abraham Lincoln scholars. And like he said, that last time he went to a convention, they welcomed Rabbi Menachem Ganak, not only a great Lincoln scholar, but also the one who writes all of the kosher laws for Orthodox Jews in America, which is quite a promotion from a rabbi to the one who makes the laws. But but so his shaila was: Is he allowed to go to such a thing during Sfira, to such a dinner where I guess I don't know what they do. They all come in beards. I don't know. I don't know if it's like a Star Trek convention. Like, I'm not sure. Not sure exactly what they do, but whatever they do, you know, where they socialize over Lincoln. So that's issue number one. Is a general issue of what is and is not allowed during Sfira as far as celebrations and get-togethers and gatherings, and why it is that there are different. It seems to be that people are lenient on a number of issues. Then another shaila that came up in a couple of different contexts, but one in particular was that a young lady was, this was before Yantif, she's in a graduate school for physical therapy, I believe it is, and there are lectures on Yantif. So she told the head of the program, sorry, I can't be there on Yantif. And he said, no problem, we'll video the lectures for you. Well, now we don't put them online and give them to everybody, but you're going to miss it, we'll video the lectures. So now that they're going out of their way to video these lectures for her, is she allowed to use them? You know, this comes up in a number of different contexts. Sometimes people will make a simcha or something, and they'll invite non-Jewish co-workers. So whenever you see something out of the ordinary today, what's the first thing people do when they see something interesting? They right away take out their phone and video, whoa, this is cool. So they get a video of it. So now they have video of their kid's bar mitzvah. You know, they didn't see that someone, that the guy was taking a video, but someone was taking a video of the kid's bar mitzvah. Or this comes up a lot of times in, where is it, in Uman, right? Where they all go, and all the Goyim know that if they take videos of these thousands of Jews, they could sell it to them after, after Yantif. So to what extent are you allowed to utilize that? You never asked them to do it, but they are doing it. So can you utilize that? So those are the two issues. Which one do we want to talk about? The sphere issues or the video issue? Video, sphere, both. Okay. Star with sphere? Because we start with sphere, we may never come out of it. So let's start with the video issue. It's a little bit. It'll probably be a little quicker. So we'll start with the video issue. I saw the reason I wanted to talk about it this week. I just saw this week that Rabbi Daniel Mann from Eretz Yisrael, from Eretz Chemda, I believe, wrote an article about this. I just saw it online this week on Gil Student's website this week. And Rabbi Mann, anyone know who Rabbi Mann is? I never met him in person, but we've corresponded. He's I think they say like one of the leaving Talmidim of Rav Willig Shlita. He's a big Talmud of Rav Mordechai Willig, and a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. And he writes very nicely in Halacha. He's also a kidney donor, an altruistic kidney donor. So he's done nice things for people. Okay, so he was asked the following question. He said that at his son, whoever was asking the question said that at their son's Shabbos bar mitzvah, a non-Jew came to shul and started videoing what was going on. So he said he would have asked him to stop if he would have noticed, but I didn't notice, and now he's got this video. Is he allowed to use it? So very similar to the question that I mentioned before, that I was asked by this young lady in physical therapy school. Can she use the video? So Rabbi Mann just points out, you know, the basic sugya. The Gemara in Shabbos Tav Kuf Chav Beis Amar Aleph, that certainly there are two isurim in Amir al-Akum. There's an isur of Daber Daber. You're not allowed to speak, ask for something to be done. That's one isur. Then there's a separate isur, not to ask for something to be done, but to benefit from malacha that was done for you, even if you didn't ask for it. You know, with all of the kuntzim that people know how to get around Amir al-Akum, you know, to go to the housekeeper and hint to her in 18 different ways about how it's too dark, too light, too hot, too cold, or whatever it is that you need done. People don't realize that you really need to get around both of those Yisurim. Hinting, first of all, people also don't know the difference between Remiza B'derech Tzivoy and Remiza Shalom B'derech Tzivoy, as far as Amir La'akum is concerned. A lot of times people will say something like, oh, it is so dark in here, can you do anything about that? So that's a Remiza B'derech Tzivoy, because you're asking them to take action on it. To just say that it's dark, that's a different story. It's a very confusing area of halacha, and because of that, or people think like if you say it in a broken Spanish, or if you say it slowly enough in English, that somehow that's not a violation of Amir al-Akum. All of that is a violation of Amir al-Akum. One has to be careful to know the rules before they ask. But that's not what this is about, because if you didn't ask, this is the second isser of Amir al-Akum, the isser of not the Amira, but of benefiting from a malacha that a guy does for you. Now, if a guy does a malacha for you, how long do you have to wait until you can benefit from it after Shabbos? B'kitei sheyasu. As long as it would take for you to have done the malacha yourself. So if a guy, sews me a nice beged or something on Shabbos, so I'd be allowed to use it only if I leave enough time after Shabbos to be able to sew the beged for myself, and then I'm allowed to use it after that. That's the din of B'kidei Sheyasu. What is B'kidei Sheyasu in this situation?
Never.
Never, right? Why?
Because you can't take a video on Shabbos.
Yeah, meaning you'll never be able to capture that moment, ever. There's no amount of time after Shabbos that it would take to capture the moment of your kid getting his aliyah and shul on Shabbos. So it can never, there is no B'kidei Sheyasu. So as it turns out, if this falls in the category of that which is done by a non-Jew for you, for a Jew, you're stuck. You cannot use the video. So what's the question over here?
What if you pay for it? Then you're not receiving, you're not technically
receiving. It's even worse.
You're taking it afterward, meaning you didn't ask him to do it for you, and he's not doing it for you.
He's doing it for himself. No, but he's doing it to get paid, but he's doing it for you to get so that he can get paid. Meaning that's like the ultimately mukhrach that he's doing it for you. Yeah. So what's the issue over here? The issue is his kavana. You have to figure out what was he doing it for. So Rabbi Mann points out, and I could be mispronouncing his name because we've only corresponded in writing. I forgot. He told me that I was mispronouncing his name, but I don't remember if it was his first name or his last name that I'm mispronouncing. But it was, I think I said Daniel. It's really Rabbi Daniel Mann, or maybe it's Mann and Man. I don't know, but I could be mispronouncing. So if anyone wants to correct me, feel free. If you know. Anyone know him? No? No. Okay. So what he points out is that there are four possible kavanas that the guy might have when he's taking the video. Kavana number one is he's doing it for himself because he loves your son and would enjoy sharing this moment. A little creepy, right? But that's a possibility, I guess. Possibility number two is he knows you and he knows that you would enjoy seeing this video. Meaning a lot of times you're in a situation like that where you see that I'm somewhere and let's say a kid is saying a Dvar Torah. Let's say in camp or something, a kid gets up to say a Dvar Torah and I'm good friends with the kid's parents. So right away, take out the video. Not for me. I'm there. I can enjoy it right now. But why? Because give nachas to the parents, right? So clearly doing it for the nachas that the parents are going to get. Third possibility is he wants to do it and he's happy to share it with you and he knows that you would like it also, that it's done for both of you. And the fourth possibility is he wasn't thinking at all. It's just when you see something interesting, you take a video because it's the year 2018 and no one thinks. Everyone just videos. That's what you do. So now if that's the case, it would seem that there's no issur because he wasn't doing it for you. If he was doing it for himself, obviously there's no issur. If he's doing it purely for you, obviously it is issur. So the question is, what if he was doing it because he found it interesting and because he knew that you would enjoy it, right? He was doing it for both. So that's an interesting discussion. The Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Chav Beis says that if a guy does malacha for a group of people, then it depends on what the majority of that group is. If it's Rov Yisrael, then it's asur to get hana from it. But if it's Rov Akum, then it's mutter to get hana from it. What if it's 50-50? It's an even number, Jew and non-Jew. Then the Gemara says it's asur. The question is why? If it's 50-50, why would it be asur? This is machlokas we've shown him. Rashi says that it's asur because it's considered to be a safek, who he did it for, meaning there when he does it for both, we treat that like a safek, similar to the ritva that the Rav made famous about Ben Hashmashos, right? The Ben Hashmashos is treated like a safek, not because it's a safek, whether it's Yom or Laila, but that it's both Yom and Laila simultaneously, and therefore you treat it like a safek. So a similar type of idea, that he did it, yes, both for himself and for you. Halachically, we treat that like a safek, and for whatever reason, we're machmir on the safek, even though it's a drabanan. For whatever reason, we're machmir on this safek. Or the other possibility is that we always assume that if it's 50-50, we always assume that he acted for both parties, for both halves. And if you do it for both, then it's going to be asr. So that's the assumption of the other possibility. That doing it for both is going to be asr. The Rama writes in Tafkuf Tesvav Sif Vav that if you know that something was done for Jews and non-Jews, then it's usher even if the Rov is not Jewish. If you know for sure, it's not a suffix, you know for sure that he had Jews in mind as well, then it's usher. So chances are this is usher. The only way this is going to be mutter to get benefit from the video is if you know that he was doing it for himself. And how would you know if he's doing it for himself? So can you ask him? So maybe you could ask him, Masiach Levituma, but if he knows that you're relying on him for halacha, and he knows, he has any inkling of what the right answer is in order to benefit you, he may, play along and try to benefit you. So you would have to ask him in a way that you have some level of confidence that he's being honest. When I asked Rav Schachter, about the case of the girl, going to school, so getting the videos from school. He said if the videos are made available for other students, he thought that it's not considered to be done specifically for her and would be mutter. Now, that is not so clear, because when she asked the dean, she said, I'm going to miss the class. What did the dean say? Okay, so we will video it. Didn't sound like it was going to be set up otherwise. So even though it's going to be made available to other students, so it's being done both for Yisrael and Nachum, but clearly it's being done for Yisrael as well. If they have the practice of videoing everything, every class, so fine. So then it's just being done for themselves. The school likes to do it, and it's made available for the Israel. But if they didn't, they don't have the practice of videoing every class, and this is a response to her, so then it's somewhat questionable. Sometimes when you ask for Pshat L'Shai, the best thing you get is not the tshuva, it's the stories that come along with it. So he told us that that there was a guy from Montreal who said that his father was a big Mizrahi leader, and he had a huge library of Svarim. And years ago, many years ago, obviously, Rav Herzog visited Montreal, and he was sitting in the library, and he was trying to look at Svarim, and it was getting dark outside, and the maid came in and turned on the light in the library. So Rav Herzog left the room, didn't want to get hana from the malacha of the maid. So years later, father died, son Yarshind the library, the house, the whole thing. So and Rav Gorin, next chief rabbi, shows up and comes for a Shabbos. And Rav Gorin is visiting this time. His son Yarshin, the house, the library, and the maid. Right, still there. 20 years later, Rav Gorin is sitting in the library and he's reading. And it starts to get dark outside. The maid turns on the light, takes out a book, sits down and reads for a few minutes, and then walks out. Apparently she learned her lesson. She remembered that she learned from her Herzog that it has to be done for herself as well in order for him to be able to get hana from it. So that was the Rav Shachter said he told that story in the Young Israel Aron Cedars, and someone had come over to him a few years ago. Someone came over to him and told him that he knows the family, he knows the maid, and she had just passed away like a couple of years ago. So anyway, okay. So that's that story. Yeah.
Why didn't the Beis Yosef just mean that you have to repeat that smash specific act at the Shabbos?
Because the Israel is getting hana from the malacha, so it's not called hana if from malacha being done on Shabbos, if you could have done it after Shabbos. But if it's something that could not be done after Shabbos, then of course it's hana from what was done on Shabbos.
Let's say in your case, there was like a specific garment that made that linen, that cloth was only available on Shabbos.
And in a chidami.
Yeah. And there's an implication you're also going to buy that case?
Probably not. It was something that can only be done on Shabbos. Yeah.
There would be a difference if it's second day Yom Tov and another Jews.
So I asked Rav Shachter specifically, oh, another Jew is even worse. But I asked him even with the guy about if we could be Mekel with Yom Tov Sheni. He said no. He said he thought that we have to be Machmir Yom Tov Sheni as well.
There's a case on the Shiva news where when the guy in the parachute a few months ago came out of the plane, so Jews in Israel were taking video and it was on Shabbat. The Jews...
Yeah, so it's an old Shaila. You know, there's a lot of times... I'll give you another example. It's baseball season, right? So... how does it work with the time zones? If the Yankees are playing on the West Coast on Saturday afternoon, right? Am I right with the time zones? So Shabbos is over here, so I'm turning on the game and I'm listening to Susan Waldman, who I would imagine is a Jew. Yeah, you know. She's Jewish. So describing where I'm watching the Mets and I'm listening to Gary Cohn, describe it. If you can't play, you announce. So the Yidden are all the announcers. I'm listening to them describe over there. And it's Shabbos there. So getting hana from the Melachot. Now they're doing it for the entire world. But it's Jews. It's not non-Jews. Yeah.
Maybe to clarify this, I don't know if this was asking, the second day of it in Israel as American
Jews. Oh, in Israel.
Okay.
Oh, that's a different story. I thought you meant that because second day is only Minhag HaVasim B'Yadeinu. Oh. Okay, now that's a different story. That L'chora would be mutter. They're not doing anything wrong.
Even if I'm in a video, that's... I thought me being in a video on Shabbos or Yom Kippur.
Oh, they're taking a video of you when you're in Israel on the second day of Yom Kippur. Oh, the Seder. They want to film the Seder. Or Simchas Torah or something like that. It happens a lot in Simchas Torah, yeah.
Second Seder.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know.
For the classes in the grand school, they get recorded all the time.
I would think that's for sure.
Is it you have to wait,
they
have
to
ask? No.
No, wasn't done for you. It's not a miracle. Let's get to a little bit to the Sefirah thing. So just, I don't know how much of it we're going to be able to get to. It's important to remember when discussing these Avelus of Sefirah issues, what the basis of the Avelus is, and what it says in Shulchan Aruch and what was added later. So you can get a basic idea of like the we observe all the minhagim, of course, but to get an idea of how severe the different levels of minhagim are. So the basis for the Sefira we know very well is from the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Samach Beis, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Lama Torah Bialduso, Yilma Torah Bizuknuso. Rabbi Kiva says, if you learn Torah when you're young, you shall learn Torah when you're old as well. Hayilo Talmidim Bialduso, Yilo Talmidim Bizuknuso. If you have Talmidim when you're young, still try to have more Talmidim when you're old. If you have children when you're young, try to have more children when you're old. You don't know which ones you're going to get the most nachas from, which ones are going to be the most successful in the so you continue to go into old age, you continue to try to be mamet talmidim, you continue within reason to try to have more children, v'chulei. That's Rabbi Kiva, and the Gemara says in that context, and he should know because shnei masel zugim talmidim ha'ilo Rabbi Kiva, he had 12,000 pairs of talmidim when he was younger, well, somewhat younger, and they all died. Lo nagu kavod zevzeh. And then he established a new small group of Talmidim and Ramei, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lezman, Shemua, and it turns out Heim Hamidu Torah, they're the ones that established the Torah for all of us for all time. So the few Talmidim that he had Bizaknusa were the ones that lasted, but those Talmidim that he had died, the Gemara just throws in a comment, Kula Mesu Mi Pesach V'Ad Atzeres. You know, people often think that it says somewhere in the Gemara that they all died until Lag BaOmer. Not true. It doesn't say that in the Gemara. The Gemara says Kula Mesu Mi Pesach V'Ad Atzeres. The Gemara never heard of Lag BaOmer. The Gemara doesn't. Lag BaOmer does not come up as a, it's not a Talmudic holiday. In Shulchan Aruch, it says that there is a tradition that they stopped on Lag BaOmer. One of many traditions about how it exactly worked. What it sounds in the Gemara is that it spanned the entire period of Pesach Ad Atzeres, but there are many deos, many different opinions of exactly how it worked. There was some tradition that it was 33 of the days. Maybe it's all the days except for the Shabbosos and the Rosh Chodesh. You do all the men and the Shloshim Yagvala, and now you figure it out how it comes out to exactly 33. Maybe it's the first 33, maybe it's the last 33, whatever it is. 33 days is the tradition on one level or another. That's what it says in the Gemara. Now, because of that, because of the fact that all these Talmidim died during this period, so we're no egg nihugei avelus. This is quoted by the Torah in Siman Tav Tzadi Gimel. Shulchan Aruch writes two particular nihugei avelus. That's all the Shulchan Aruch mentions. Number one, Sif Aleph, Nogim Shelo Lisa Isha Bein Pesach LaAtzeres Ad Lag BaOmer. That minig is not to get married until Lag BaOmer. Then the Rama writes, but Milag Ba'omer ve'elach hakol shari. After Lag Ba'omer, it's all mutter. Very clear, both Mechaber and Rama, not before Lag Ba'omer. Sif Beis Shulchan Aruch says, Noagim shaloli staper ad Lag Ba'omer. Don't get a haircut until Lag BaOmer. Now, Mishabura quotes all the other minhagim also, not just from the beginning until Lag BaOmer. I was told, someone emailed me this week, that Moshe held that the Iker minhag in Lita was to Dafka keep the second half of Sefira, that was the Iker. I didn't know that was true, but apparently that's true. Okay, but in Shulchan Aruch, it says until Lag, Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, it says until Lag BaOmer. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Now, in addition to that, Because we said, well, wait a second, if you're observing not getting married and not getting haircuts, what does that sound like? That sounds like avelus. So maybe we should observe other dinim of avelus as well. Now, to what extent, other dinim of avelus, by the way, would include not going to parties, not listening to music, all of these other things that you would do when one is Rachman Atzlan in avelus. So to what extent do all of those halachos apply? So it seems that would really depend on how you look at the period of Sfira. Rav Sacks mentioned this week, I think in his Sicha, that Rav Avadya Yosef writes in the Tshuva that fundamentally the period of Sfira Sa'omer is different than the period of the Bein HaMetzarim that we have during the summertime. The Bein HaMetzarim is between Shavuos and Tisha B'Av, is a fundamentally sad time. It is a time where we do not recite a Shechianu. You cannot recite a Shechianu because we're not happy about being Bazman Azeh, right? Or but during Sfira, Ramban writes that the Sfira summer period should be viewed as a sort of Cholam Moed between Pesach and Shavuos. As if Pesach and Shavuos are the bookends and Sfira is a Cholam Moed, a fundamentally uplifting, happy time. So if that's the case, just because something is avelus and it's observed during Bein HaMetzarim does not necessarily mean it's going to carry over to Sfira. See, haircuts, of course, says in Shulchan Aruch. Marriage, of course, says in Shulchan Aruch. Parties, maybe we're not going to be so nervous about having parties during Sfira. Shechianu, for sure, it would be mutter to say Shechianu during Sfira. So many poskim at least hold Shechianu is mutter. Most are machmir about the parties because weddings are an example of a party that even though it's a mitzvah, it's a party. That's what makes it usher. So certainly a party that doesn't have the mitzvah, the saving quality of being a mitzvah like a wedding would for sure be usher. But a Shechianu would be mutter. And just fundamentally, the days of Sfira are not as bad as other days. Rav Moshe writes in Igros Moshe Ebenezer Chelik Alev Sim Tzadiches that it should really be the same, but he at least raises that as a sniff lahakel, that maybe Sfira is a little different than 3 weeks. Rav Shachter quoted from Rav Salvechik, and this is one of the big people who know one Torah from Rav Salvechik usually know this one, that Rav Salvechik viewed the period of Sfira Sa'omer and the period of Bein HaMetzarim to not just be Stam Minhag, that everything that we're knowing has to be patterned in some way after a din. So what's the Ke'en Daraisa Tiknum, or the existing din that we patterned the Minhagim of Sfira after? Must be the dinim of Yud Beis Chodesh for an Avel. So therefore, both the Bein HaMetzarim and the period of Sfira follow the dinim of Yud Beis Chodesh for an Avel, which would suggest that there's no difference. Rav Shachter added that it could be not like that Ramban that says that it's a positive time in a Cholam Moed, but based on the Zohar, Magen Avraham quotes the Zohar that as one of the reasons that we don't eat, that we do eat Milchig on Shavuos, is that the Sfiras HaOmer period is a period of Shiva Nekiyim on a certain level. It's a period where we're coming out of Tumas Mitzrayim, we're coming out of a stage of Tumah, and just like a woman has to observe Shiva Nekiyim, or a Zav has to observe Shiva Nekiyim before Tahara happens, so we have Shiva Nekiyim. What does that have to do with Milchig? Because the Gemara says that an Isha that is nursing is Misolekas Dam, that Dam Nechar V'Naseh Chalav, that she's not going to bleed because the blood, however you explain this medically, the blood somehow in her body turns into milk instead, and that's how she nurses. So the greatest symbol of purity is milk, because milk means there's no dam. The dam is turned instead into milk. So in Shavuos, when purity is finally achieved, then there's milk. But for the 7 weeks leading up to Shavuos, the purity has not yet been achieved. It's still the Shiva Nekiyim. And during the Shiva Nekiyim, we're still Betumah. And Tumah means distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also a reflection of Avelus. Closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Simcha. Distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Avelus. And therefore, maybe fundamentally even, it's a time of Avelus. Why do I mention all this? Because how you view the period of Sfira is definitely going to have an effect on whether you say you can go to a ball game or these kinds of things during Sfira. Now, as far as a party is concerned, if you hold like the Rav, it's absolutely Asr. If you hold like Rav Avadya, probably Asr also, because it's, you know, it's like a wedding. It's like a subcategory of a wedding. However, the Shulchan Aruch writes that if someone violates the minhagim of Sfira and gets married during the period of Sfira, we do not knas them. We ain onshino, so we don't punish them. We don't punish them. So in Yisuvin Nami, Misha Kavatz Vekanas ain onshino, so we don't punish him. So a number of poskim. I mentioned something on Tuesday night in the shir that I wasn't sure what the heter was to attend a wedding that's done be'isser. So someone pointed out to me, no, it says in Shulchan Aruch, ein onshino. So, and a number of the poskim, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, Rav Moshe Feinstein, many of the poskim point out, can there be a greater onesh than no one showing up to the wedding? Right? So ein onshino so means you show up to the wedding, even though the wedding is done be'isser, which is surprising perhaps, but that's how a number of poskim suggest. Now, certainly if the wedding is done beheter, and it's just not your minhag that they're observing, that Rav Moshe writes that for sure you're allowed to go, and once you're going, of course, you're allowed to dance and celebrate with them as well. What about shaving or getting a haircut for the wedding that you're going to during the period of Sfira? So Rav Moshe writes that if you're not going to go because you're too embarrassed to show up to a wedding unshaven, so your options are either I won't go or I have to shave, then you can shave because you have a mitzvah to be mesameh chas v'kal that overrides the minhag. That's how Rav Moshe writes. Or if it's for some reason going to ruin the simcha in some way or another. So often when people ask, can I shave? I'll say, well, do you think it's going to ruin the simcha if you don't shave? And if you do think it's going to ruin the simcha, maybe you should do a little cheshbon nefesh and your own sense of self-importance in terms of, I don't think they're going to care that much whether you shave or not. What about going to a ball game? So Rav Soloveitchik held that that's a simchas mereis. That's a bunch of people getting together. I said to Rav Shechter, I thought, I always wanted to say a chiluk between a playoff game and a regular season game. I didn't expect Rav Shechter to hear this, but what's the difference between a playoff game and a regular season game? You ever been?
High-fiving.
Yeah, you're high-fiving strangers at a playoff game. Right, completely different. High-fiving strangers at a playoff game. Everyone's in the party together. Right, that's what a playoff game is. A regular season game, you're just going and enjoying with your family or your friend or your coworker or whoever's there at the game. And you know, it's not, but you don't really have anything to do with the other people in the stadium. You know, you may all cheer for the same things or boo at the same things or whatever. Not nice to boo, by the way. But you know, you may all, but you're not going to be. You're not really in it with them. He didn't want to hear it. And Rav Shechter said that also it's fun. And the fact that it's fun should make it more us. Because he told Rabbi Gnack he didn't think there was a problem with going to the Lincoln dinner. He said that it's not a social event. It's mostly non-Jews you have very little in common with. Rabbi Gnack is like, what are you talking about? I have very little in common with. We're all Lincoln scholars. What do you mean? He said his actual words were, Rav Shechter, I don't think you understand how much I enjoy this. So Rav Shechter still thought it was mutter. He still thought that Rabbi Gnack could go. Interestingly, Rav Shechter was not happy that yeshivas and shuls do dinners during the period of Sfira. That's a very common practice that they do dinner. I was just at a dinner on, I guess Sunday night was still Rosh Chodesh, so maybe it wasn't. But there was a major dinner in the Five Towns, and Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky was there. So it must be that... Because people assume for a dvar mitzvah that would be mutter, or that no one really likes dinners anyway. So Rav Shechter thought people enjoy dinners. You're there with all your friends, you know, everyone that you daven with, everyone that you associate with. That it, you don't enjoy maybe having to pay whatever $500-$600 for two people. Once you've already paid for it, you might as well go enjoy it. So people enjoyed the dinners. Rav Shechter thought that it was a machlokas of Soloveitchik and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik whether you can go to the movies during Sfira. You know, that's like the classic question every kid asks the rabbi. Can I go to the movies during Sefirah? You should ask, can I go to the movies during the rest of the year? Okay, great. So so the Rav thought that it's asr because it's for fun. He thought you shouldn't do things that are just done for fun. So a comedy club, I think, is also highly problematic. It might depend on the type of comedian. You know, if you want to draw my chilek by baseball games, you know, there are comedians that play the crowd. You know, and they get the crowd involved, and the comedians are just doing their performance, right? But either way, that's like, you know, if he's decent, you know, if he's a good comedian, that's a good amount of you know, of enjoyment. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik though didn't think that movies counts as simchas merayos because your enjoyment of the movie is in no way enhanced by how large the crowd is. Adrabi, you may enjoy it more if there's a smaller crowd. You know, so he thought that movies would be mutter. So now what else did we say? So as far as Yom HaTzmaut, we have a minute for that? Yeah, we're a little late already. Okay, as far as Yom HaTzmaut is concerned, it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult to judge based on, you know, you can't like go to a classic Haredi posek and say, you know, am I allowed to shave for Yom HaTzmaut? Because if they hold that there's no such thing as Yom HaTzmaut, so then, of course, you're not going to get upset. You know, within the construct that we're working, that Yom HaTzmaut, that we have a reshus to be koveya yantif, based on what's l'chora schalta de gula, or however you want to formulate it, and it's a real thing, it's a real holiday, something really worthy of celebrating, so you need to go to people who believe that to be the case, and then figure out whether it overrides the minhagim of Sfira. So the one who wrote the tshuva on the topic was Rav Yitzchak Nissim, who was the Sephardic chief rabbi, and he wrote that he thought it was mutter. He thought that all of the avelus in the Gemara, in the Shulchan Aruch are mutter. He said none of them are mentioned in the Gemara. These nihuge avelus. And Rav Chaim Palagi in Moed L'Chol Chai has a list of different communities or different people that had personal miracles happen to them during the time of Sfira and were permitted by Poskim to suspend Minhage Sfira for that. It's known in Merkas Harav that Rav Tzvi Yehuda used to insist that people shave for Yom HaTzmaut. So there are, you know, there are significant Tatilumi poskim. They say, I wanted to ask for Sachs about this, they say that C. Pesach Frank allowed getting haircuts for Yom HaTzmaut. I'm curious whether that's true. I would ask for Sachs because he's his great-grandson, so I was curious about that. Rav Schachter has a little bit of a more nuanced view. Rav Schachter holds anything that is a clear celebration of the State of Israel, that's part of the Yom HaTzmaut celebration, can override the Minhagim of Sfira. But if it's not a celebration of Israel, it's just makes me more comfortable to do, then it would not override the Minhagim of Sfira. So, music, dancing, that kind of thing, plus those are not mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, and they're a clear celebration in honor of Yom HaTzmaut, that would override Sfira. But shaving is not a clear celebration of, and it is mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, and therefore maybe should not override Sfira. So that was Rav Schachter's approach. Just parenthetically, Rav Schachter also holds that Yom HaTzmaut should always be celebrated on Hey Iyar in America. And in Eretz Yisrael, where there's concerns about Chol Shabbos and things like that, but in America, where you don't have such concerns, so he thinks it should always be on Hey Ear. I just got a text from a close friend today whose daughter goes to a local high school, and he said, I'm wondering on whose authority they're having music and celebrations today on Thursday on what's essentially what is Dalet Ear. Because Rav Schachter would say, yes, you can have the music and the celebrations, but it should be on Hey Ear. So, okay, I mean, you know, those two shitos aren't necessarily connected to each other, meaning you can paskin like him in one and not paskin like him on the other. Bottom line is that it is a day that is worthy of very, very great celebration. How we choose to celebrate should be, you know, in whatever brings us great simcha and a great appreciation. I happen to love the way that the yeshiva celebrates by having Rav Soloveitchik share Divrei Torah. Ein simcha Kesimchas HaTorah, and when the Torah is Eretz Yisrael related and relates to the theme of day in Yana Diyoma, so that's how we do Regalim also, right? Dorish bin Yana Shal Yom, and to have a Su'udah, it's a very Jewish way to celebrate a very wonderful day. So I think that it's an entirely appropriate way to celebrate. So, okay, Yom HaTzmut Sameach, everybody, and I guess it's over now, and have a wonderful Shabbos. Oh, just beginning. Okay.